trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. Wow, that sounds great, doesn't it? Are we living in that land at the present? A land where you will lack bread without scarcity. Have you ever at one time in your entire life, now some of you in the older generation, maybe this has never happened to anybody in my generation or down to my knowledge. I've never met a person to whom it has happened in this country. Has there ever been a time where you could not fill your stomach on as much bread as you wanted? Ever. Now, when I was growing up, my mother bought Country Hearth wheat bread. White bread you could buy for about 59 cents a loaf. Country Hearth wheat bread at the time was about $1.29 a loaf. Now, Country Hearth wheat bread is about $2.79 a loaf, and I think you can get white bread for 99 cents a loaf. Now, for $3, you can go down to the store and get a full loaf of Country Hearth wheat bread and eat all that you want of it, basically anytime any of you want. We spend $3 on a cup of coffee twice a day, some of us, and yet we could have our fill of bread for $3 every single day. But you know, that's not really good enough for us, is it? No, we don't want bread. We want fried chicken strips from Guthrie's, don't we? With the extra sauce for another 25 cents and the sweet tea with the little bitty chunks of ice in it. And so that's going to cost us for one meal all $8.95. And so we're going to go down, we're going to get a little chunky ice, and we're going to get our sweet tea, and we're going to eat one meal. And then, you know what, that night we might want something like a little 8-ounce sirloin from Lone Star or something like that. And we might go and buy some. We're just not satisfied with bread anymore, are we? Because there's so many more options. Has there ever been a time for most of us that we could not fill our stomachs with something? Never. This is us right here. He's explaining to us that we happen to be in the land of promise. Now, of course, we're not in the land of Canaan, but what you understand I'm telling you is you are as rich or richer than the Israelites were about to be in the land of Canaan. In fact, I can say this unreservedly, we are living today in the most prosperous, wealthy nation that the world has ever seen, by far, hands down, inarguably, no question. Do you understand that in the course of the world, it has been unheard of for the general population of a country to be able to walk into their house and turn a faucet on and get warm water? In the course of history, it has been virtually unheard of for a person to be able to go into their house and go to a little box on the side of the wall called a thermostat and turn the temperature up to whatever heat or down to whatever cool degree that you want. We are living now in a time that kings in the past would be envious of the comfort that you and I both enjoy. Now, nothing wrong with that. In fact, the Bible's never said there's anything wrong with money. Well, what's the Bible say about whose money it is? God. What's the Bible say about who's doing the divvying out of this money? God. Is there anything that you should be ashamed of that you live in the richest country in the world? No, not one thing. Should you be embarrassed that you haven't? No. But watch what God says. Verse 10. When you are full and have eaten, then bless the Lord your God for the good land which He's given you. He said, look, you can be rich and more power to you. Make sure you remember to bless God for everything you've got. But now watch what He says. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God. Well, how in the world would you forget the Lord your God if you're living in the most prosperous place that anybody's ever seen? You're telling me that somebody would forget the Lord their God in a place that is so wonderful? Yeah, they would. And what would be the symptom of that? How would you know that? Well, He tells you. He tells you exactly how you would know that you had forgotten the Lord your God. Watch in verse 17. Then in your heart you say, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. He says, if you forget the Lord your God, then what you're going to say in your mind is, it's mine, my might, my power, that's why I've got it. Now I go around speaking on stewardship all over the country, literally. I've got a video on it, got a book on it, co-authored with a guy by the name of John Farber. Just spoke on it up in Florence. I'm speaking on it again. Oh, the 23rd, where am I going to be? Over in Athens, Alabama. Speak on this stuff all the time. There are lots of people in the audience who hate it. They think, oh, another sermon on giving. I can't believe it. Every January we got a sermon on giving. I love speaking on giving. To me, it's one of the most practical ways that a person can change his or her life immediately of anything that there is in the Bible. It is one of the most thrilling subjects to me in the entirety of Scriptures. Now, as I speak on giving, lots of times what I'll hear is, well, you know, the money I've got because I work hard. Really? I mean, you got your money because you work hard? Now, don't misunderstand me. I believe that a person that works hard will have more money than a person who doesn't. I think the proverb writer tells us all about what happens to a slothful person. A man doesn't work, a man doesn't eat. Understand that. But let me ask you a question. Do you have the money that you have because you work hard? No, you do not. Let me explain to you how I know that. I've been all over the world, been to Honduras. In fact, I was at Honduras about 6 months after a hurricane hit. Over in Honduras, there were lots of people that were living in black plastic houses on the side of the road. We went into this one particular village. There was a guy there who looked like he was one of the village leaders, basically. He was living in a little shack that you would not probably in this country even want a person to spend a night in. He would get up, oh, you're looking at about 5 in the morning, go out and work in the field till 7:30 or 8 until it got dark. Then he would come in, just like everybody else in the area, work for another 2 or 3 hours. He would go to bed about 12, get up 5 the next morning. He would do that 6 or 7 days a week. Work 12 to 16 hours a day. And in the course of his entire earthly existence, he would make a cumulative total of what you make in 1 month. Now, why is it that there is a man who works in Honduras 17 hours a day and will work like that for 45 or 50 years and make in his entire life what you'll make in a single month? But I mean, you're working harder. That's why you got the money you got, because you're a hard worker. Yeah, you're a hard worker. You're not working harder than him, I guarantee you. And yet the money that you have comes to you at a much faster rate than his comes to him. Now, why is that? Because the Bible explains that it is God who is distributing this wealth. It's God whose stuff it is and who allows it to go various different places. Now, lest you think that God is being unfair to that poor gentleman over in Honduras, oh, please understand that the Bible explains that it's hard for a rich man to enter heaven. In fact, it's so hard that when the disciples were trying to get the truth out of Jesus, Jesus said, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into heaven. You're going to have a lot more responsibility, and it's going to be more difficult for you in the area of money than it is going to be for him. And he's not going to have the issues with stewardship that you're going to have because he doesn't have any money anyway. So, spiritually speaking, don't think that God's being unfair to that man, because every single person has their own struggles and temptations they're going to have to deal with, and one of his is not going to be stinginess or covetousness most of the time. Now, you say, well, I know, but the money I've got, well, I've got it because I'm a frugal person. I mean, I'm not a spendthrift. I don't waste my money on steak dinners and new cars and fancy houses and new carpet. I protect my money. I'm frugal. I think about what I do with it. Oh, that's good. You know, I think a frugal person will have more money than they would have if they weren't frugal. But let me ask you this question. You ever found a plastic water bottle and tied a piece of baling twine to it and used it as a sandal until that plastic water bottle sole wore out and you tried to find another one digging through somebody's garbage? You ever been that frugal? Have you ever dug through someone's garbage to find any discarded plastic bottle, taken that home to your house and used it as your fine china? You ever done that? You ever stopped on the side of the road to see an old blown out tire, taken that home like it was the greatest Christmas present you have ever seen, and cut out a pair of foot-sized rubber soles and used those as your shoes? You ever done that? That's frugal right there, isn't it? Woo. That person ought to be loaded. Person that'll do that. That frugal. And yet you know where I'm going with that. I've seen people do that. Other countries. I've seen people wear a water bottle, baling twine sandal. And yet you'll have more money in a single week of your life than they'll have in the entirety of theirs. Now, how is that? Well, you got money because you're frugal. No. You got money because God has put you in a position where your efforts financially are more rewarding. And that's a fact of the matter. And it's not your money either, because you're going to leave every single penny of it that you have. One more and we'll move on from this. Well, you got more money because you're wise with it. Boy, you look at all the investments and you make sure that you're not overly invested in one company, and you make sure that you have it spread over all kinds of stuff, and you make sure that you haven't put money in a bad investment, and you've studied it and you've worked on it and you're wise with your investment. Okay, let's think about that. I think wisdom in dealing with your funds is something that is good. You'll have more money with wisdom than you would without it. But let me ask you a question. Do you have money because you are wise? Job, the Bible says, was the greatest man of the East. He was the wealthiest individual in the entire section of the globe. You divide it East, West, North, South, he's the biggest, he's one of the big four. Got more money than anybody in the entire area. Boy, he's wise with it. He's good with it. Satan comes up to God and says, been walking around on the earth. God says, have you considered my servant Job? None like him in all the earth, one who fears God and shuns evil. Satan says, yeah, because you made a hedge around him. You let me take his stuff and he'll curse you to your face. God says, okay, take his stuff. And one day, Job loses all of his sheep, all of his camels, all of his oxen, all of his donkeys. Quick question, was he less wise the day after he lost everything than he was the day before? Had he just gone crazy and made some terrible investments and that's why he's now broke? You know where I'm going with that. God entrusts His money to you, and don't think for a second that on the day of judgment, you're not going to have to stand before God and account for every single dime that He's given you. Every dime. It's all God's. You don't take it with you. You use it while you're here. I was hearing a story of a preacher. Paul said he traveled all around, did a bunch of gospel meetings and stuff, and he had never bought a new car, but he decided he was going to, and so he bought him a new car to drive him around to all the gospel meetings he was doing, and he felt like he understood stewardship and felt like this was something that was good and he was going to do it, and so he bought him a new car. 2 weeks later, he was driving through a stop light. He had stopped. It was his turn to go. Driving through, the other person coming on the right side of him did not stop, slammed right into his car. A brand new car, had it for 2 weeks, the newest, nicest car he'd ever had. He got out, he looked at it, he said, God, look what they did to your car. You know, wouldn't it be good if every single one of us had that type of mentality? There was a professor up at Freed Hardeman. He had a truck that he used to let students use if they needed to move stuff from a dorm or whatever. And they would go to him and said, hey, can I borrow your truck? And he would say, yeah, it's not my truck though. It's God's truck. And God doesn't like scratches and dents. So be careful with it. Well, I'm not sure how God feels about scratches and dents, but I am sure about how God feels about stuff. And the fact of the matter is, stuff is His. And we will be required to give an account of it. And if we misunderstand that, well, I'll show you what happens. I want you to turn your Bibles to the book of Luke. In Luke chapter 12, you're going to see exactly what happens to a person who misunderstands his or her relationship with stuff. I want you to look right there in Luke chapter 12, verse 16. Well, let's get the context of it a little bit. Look right there in verse 13. A guy comes to Jesus, and it looks like Jesus is a real powerful teacher, so it looks like whatever Jesus says, people should listen to. So the guy comes up to Jesus and says, hey, Jesus, won't you tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me? He's being stingy. And Jesus says, hold on just a second. You're misunderstanding who I am. I didn't come here to arbitrate between brothers as to who gets the most cows and who owns the most land. That's not what I'm doing here. And then he says, I want you to understand that a man's life doesn't consist in the things that he owns. Now, lots of us in the United States of America have forgotten that fact, and we think he who dies with the most toys wins, and we think that the more we can accumulate, the better off we're doing, and somehow accumulating all this stuff is going to make us happy, and when we buy the next thing that we think is going to make us happy, we realize, no, it just must be the next thing, and then we buy the next thing, and then we think, oh, no, but there's a next gadget or gizmo that really is going to make us happy, and you understand where I'm going with that. It never does, but you always think, someone does, that the next thing is going to, but watch what Jesus said. A man's life doesn't consist in the things that he owns. Now, you've got a guy right here in verse 16. Jesus speaks a parable to him about a rich man whose ground yielded plentifully. Now, watch what this guy said. I want you to attempt to count the personal pronouns that this guy uses. He is inflicted, eat up with an eye disease. Watch the disease he's got. And he thought within himself, saying, "What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?" So he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there I will bestow all of my goods, store all my goods and crops. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." Whose did this guy think the things that he was stewarding were? His. "I will build my barns and I will store all my goods and I will say to my soul." Do you know that in these few verses, he says "I, me, or my" over 11 times. No, I think it's right at 11 times. 11 times. Because he thought the stuff was his. You know the irony of it? The irony of it. You see what happens. God comes to him and says, "You fool, this night your soul will be required of you." And then whose will all these things be? God was trying to impress upon him the point, oh, hey, by the way, did you forget to think that when you die, you don't take it with you? But the irony is this. Read the first statement that Jesus made in the parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded forth plentifully. What was doing the work? The ground was doing the work. It never was the rich guy's stuff to start out with. Because had it been for bad ground, the rich man wouldn't have anything. And yet when the ground did all the work for the guy, whose did he think it was? His. If we do not understand that we are stewards of God's things and that we will give an account to God for everything that He's entrusted us with, we will never ever have a proper relationship with the money that God has entrusted to us. And that's why stewardship is so very, very important for us to consider. I appreciate your kind attention and your listening. Look forward to being with you later this morning.
It's time for us to go ahead and get started this morning if we can. Love to hear that noise of chatter, brotherly chatter. It's encouraging, and we're so happy to have each one of you here at Del Rata this morning. It's a wonderful Lord's Day, and it's even better because we are assembled here to worship God. And we want to begin today by welcoming each of you to our services. I've already had the honor and the privilege of meeting several of our guests. And if you're visiting with us today, we especially want you to know how thankful we are that you're here. And I hope that you're treated in such a way today that you'll want to come back and be with us anytime you have an opportunity. I would like to make a special request of all of you, but especially our guest, if you would simply take one of the cards that is located on the pew in front of you and fill that out and pass that to one of the inside aisles, we would certainly appreciate that record. Got some positive and encouraging things to announce today. Of course, news gets out today with social networking sites quicker than ever. But I want to publicly mention that Nick and Amanda Foles are expecting a baby, and we certainly congratulate them. I think we're kind of starting an epidemic here, and I think it's good. I always want to say, who is next? So congratulations to Nick and Amanda, and of course, we love our children here, and we love the fact that we have so many. Also, JT and Betty DeFee, sitting there in their normal seats today, were married 66 years on January the 3rd, and so that's quite an accomplishment, and we certainly want to congratulate JT and Betty. We had two baptisms this past Wednesday night. Both took place after our services. I had the privilege of baptizing Holly Ostrander into Christ. And, of course, Donna Jackson had spent quite a bit of time with her. And we want to congratulate her. Also, one of our college students, a freshman at Faulkner, Michelle Westbrook, obeyed the gospel. Billy Camp baptized her into Christ. Also Wednesday night after our services. And so we want to welcome these two new sisters in Christ. I'm not going to give any updates on our sick. You receive those by email, and that information has been distributed. I do want to mention that Danielle, this is the week, and if she doesn't have the baby by Thursday, I believe they're going to induce. So I don't know if we're going to have a baby brother or a baby sister. I'm still trying to find that out, and all my investigation has turned up nothing thus far. So I'll wait and see like most of the rest of you. But anyhow, we want to keep praying for her during the course of this week that things will go well. We do want to express our sympathy. We have had the loss of loved ones. Sister Carol Brewer, her sister, Judy Capoletto, of course, she's a member here as well, passed away, and Leak Memory will be handling those arrangements, and those arrangements are incomplete, and we'll give them to you as quick as we have them. We also want to express our sympathy to Sister Dean Jordan and her family. Her brother, Joe McCullough, passed away. And by the way, Brother Joe McCullough is also the father-in-law of Gary Ramsey. And that funeral service is going to be at Leak Memory on Wednesday morning, the 16th at 11 o'clock, and visitation will begin at 10. Also, Miriam Williams, this is the aunt and the great aunt, or the aunt of Dwight Davis, the great aunt of Sam Moore, passed away, and her funeral is today at 2 o'clock. At the Liberty Church of Christ. And so let's remember all of these families in our prayers. I have this thank you note that I want to pass along to you real quick. It's from Brother Roy Kaiser. We're glad that Brother and Sister Kaiser are able to be back with us today. It simply says, I cannot express my deepest expression of appreciation, of love, and thankfulness for your cards, your phone calls, and offers of help. As Brother McKee said in his talk, I believe last Sunday, it is very comforting to attend a congregation you can call on the brethren and receive help. He says, please remember me in your daily prayers. I have a long way to go. And, you know, it's just encouraging to me personally just to see Brother Kaiser walk in the building and walk down to his seat, that gives me a lot of encouragement, because very few people probably feel as bad as he does health-wise, but he makes the effort to be here, and just that fact is very, very encouraging to me, and I'm sure it is to you. A couple of points of emphasis on activities. David Baker wants me to remind those in Inner City that you'll meet tomorrow night. The Men's Ministry Fellowship coming up on the 18th at the home of Steve Hatcher. There's a sign-up sheet. Please, men, sign up for that in the West Foyer. Area-wide is tonight at Redland Road. The bus will leave at 4:15, return between 7:30 and 7:45. I also want to put a plug in, since we have so many visitors here today, for our Fortifying the Family Day that's coming up in 1 month, February the 10th, with Brother Billy Davis. We all look forward to that each and every year. And so mark your calendar for February the 10th, 1 month from today, and we'd love to have you back for that day. Today is a very special day. We're emphasizing the subject of stewardship, and we couldn't have